Okay, so we have Meshulam Gottlieb, and it's November 19th, and 2017, and he's going to talk to us about Module 6. So you're on. Go ahead. And everybody's okay. On mute.
Okay, so you should have the PowerPoint that I sent out in front of you on the computer screen, hopefully, so you can follow along with that. I'll be reading the talk so that I don't forget anything important, and I'll try to make it as interesting and clear as possible. Okay, if you can't hear for some reason, just let me know. Okay, Family Connection leaders often ask why there are no official teaching notes for Module 6. I cannot answer this question, but based on a few presentations given by Alan Fuzetti and my own research, I have developed an approach to teaching Module 6 that organizes and makes sense of the material, and I hope gives it over in a clear and succinct fashion. I would like to share this approach with you. During the course of the column, I advise you to have the Family Connections Manual open to Module 6, and the PowerPoint I sent out open in front of you, as I will refer to these. If you're in the Detroit airport, you probably don't have that, but I think you should be able to follow on anyway. Unless she's memorized the module, she's probably memorized the module. She's taught it enough, so. Okay. Now if you're going to go on to PowerPoint, the second slide, which is entitled Some Questions Family Connections Leaders Ask. Before addressing the heart of the module, the problem-solving, problem management, and radical acceptance components of Module 6, I feel the need to validate a number of questions asked by Family Connections leaders. Following this, I will raise a few basic questions about the module in order to explain the module better and respond to the angst. Number one, some leaders ask, I don't have time to get to this module, and I don't really like it. Can I just focus on the skills we learn in the first five modules and skip it? Number two, other leaders ask, we have so little time to get through the first five modules, and they are so important to teach and practice. Can we just delete this one? And then in contrast, some say, why does this module appear at the end of the program? So many of our participants would love to have such skills taught earlier in the program. Number four, what is the difference between problem solving and problem management and the techniques we have used until now? And I'll start referring to those as PS and PM in order to save time. Number five, how does radical acceptance fit into this PS-PM chapter? My first response to these questions, which you can see on the next PowerPoint, the third slide, my first response to these questions is that you are right. There is never enough time. We have to teach, and even more importantly, practice a tremendous amount of material. Budgeting our time wisely is an enormous challenge. My second response is that many Family Connections leaders say that Module 6, and I quote, is comparable to batting in the winning run, scoring the winning touchdown, and crossing the plate. Participants who have learned it often value it highly, so I think it is worth struggling to understand it better and fit it in. As Meg Massey wrote to one Family Connections leader, generally, some participants are ready to learn Module 6, while others are still contemplating validation and trying to grasp their role in the biosocial theory. There are leaders who are at different levels of experience as well. One of the beauties of Family Connections is the flexibility it offers. When one concept resonates with the group, the leaders are free to spend more time on it. And when a concept is grasped easily, the leaders can breeze through without belaboring it. Each group may have a different focus. At the same time, the core skills are presented and modeled throughout the class. We trust the leaders to gauge the class and adjust accordingly. For the leaders and participants who are ready for it, Module 6 is the grand slam and game-winning hit. The season is long, and not every game is going to have a grand slam inning. We need to give all players a good quality bat and cleats, so they have the best chance of hitting and running a home run when they get to bat. Spectators who stay for the last inning, Module 6, deserve the opportunity to be there when the winning run comes in. So that's Meg, and she wrote that beautifully. And that's, you know, that's the sort of justification for spending this time on Module 6 and trying to figure out really what it means and how we can use it best. So now let's move. We're on PowerPoint slide 3. So let's talk about the module itself. Firstly, the problem management module is not unique to Family Connections, just good common sense behavioral therapy. and cognitive behavioral problem-solving therapies. You don't have to be a therapist or even a family member of a BPD sufferer to use these. So we teach them at the end. Once our family members are regulated, though, these techniques can be very useful. Indeed, therapies that start with problem solving or management only work with patients who are regulated. As we will see, PSPM requires logic and reason and emotional awareness to know what matters. So first we teach, stop making things worse. Be aware of what you want and need. Validate the other. Engage in active communication. Learn how to identify primary and secondary emotions so you can validate the correct one, and so forth. Once your loved one is emotionally regulated, then you can try problem-solving or management techniques. Or to put it another way, most of the literature out there deals with instrumental or practical problem-solving. And if you use that approach to solving an emotional problem, it cannot work. You don't solve emotional problems with logic. You do so with the skills we have learned, validation, and so forth. Likewise, if you use emotional problem solving for a practical problem, that will not work either. You need to match method to the problem you are dealing with. In fact, this notion is explicitly stressed on page 35 of the manual, which you can look at now if you want. Match your strategies to your goals, or in other words, your methods to your problems. And if you look at 35 on the second half of the page there, it's made clear. If we describe the situation and reactions, that, by cutting out the amygdala response, will help us sort out feelings. If we describe, that will help us communicate emotion, wants, and opinions. If we validate, that will give support. If we describe, that won't give support, that will do something else. If we negotiate, that may help the other person feel that we're correcting an injustice. But if we negotiate, that won't communicate emotion, wants, and opinions. So all throughout, we have to look for the right skill or the right strategy, which will get us to the goal that we need to get to. In family connection, to sum up, that is why we begin with the emotional regulation techniques. Our loved ones have emotional problems. Dysregulations. So we must first use certain specific techniques. And now if you go on to PowerPoint 4. So what is the difference between problem solving and problem management? At this point, it is important to make a distinction, which is unique to family connections, between the two. Problem solving is about actually solving problems. We don't always solve problems. In fact, most are not solved, certainly in family therapy. So if we call what we are doing problem solving, we sound and feel like failures. But managing the problem is a good thing too. So we prefer to talk about problem management. And then if you go on to PowerPoint slide 5, as far as radical or true acceptance of reality is placed in the chapter, first of all, it appears at the end of the chapter and at the end of the program, though it may have been discussed before, and we do discuss it before, because I feel it really is very important. However, this is a fitting place for radical acceptance, because radical acceptance is the last-ditch attempt to help ourselves. After all the change skills we have been taught, from validation and interpersonal relationship skills to problem management and behavioral analysis ones, have essentially failed, that is to say, the change you want to see happen is not happening, acceptance and even radical acceptance may be all that are left. Before we delve into the chapter itself, I think it is useful to emphasize once again, and that's part of, I think, understanding the chapter, that, quote, the big picture in this module is being able to balance the change strategies of problem solving and management with the acceptance strategies of self-validation and recontextualization of radical acceptance. And as Alan would famously say, learning to say, oh, it's not that there's a dirty sock on the stair. What it is that my wife is alive and in the house, and that recontextualizes the messy house. The goal in this chapter on problem solving is balancing the desire to change and the need to accept. So now I would like to look at the chapter itself, the body of the chapter itself. But maybe before I do that, does anyone have any questions? Okay, I'll take that as a no. So we'll now go on to the chapter outline. And the chapter outline took me a while to sort of figure out. But I think that once you see the outline, you'll see how nicely the chapter flows and works together. So on this PowerPoint slide number 6, we see that the chapter begins with the 5 approaches to problems on page 34. Then it discusses how to effectively promote change. Then it moves into collaborative problem management, which we will discuss later. Then non-collaborative problem management. And then if neither type of problem management works, then we can take a step back and consider our options on page 40. Finally, after all these attempts at managing the problem, we may be forced to come to the conclusion that we need to accept. And then you have radical acceptance on pages 41 and 42 of the manual, and finally the closing message also on page 42. So now, without further ado, I will go into the chapter. The chapter begins on page 34 with the 4 approaches, or the 5 approaches, actually, we can take to problems. This makes sense since the focus of the chapter is how to solve or manage our problems. And my daughter was at Ed McLean's 3E's program, and there they have developed an acronym, or at least they use an acronym, which I think is useful for remembering how we approach problems, though it's slightly off color. And the acronym, as you can see in the PowerPoint, is S-C-R-E-W, SCREW. And the acronym provides 5 options that are worth thinking about. I'll follow the order of the acronym in talking about them, not the order in the Family Connections manual, because I think it makes it much easier to remember. Number 1, solve the problem. Right? That's what we would like to do. Number 2, change the way you react and or feel to the problem. And that is, you know, making lemonade when you get lemons, right? 3, radically accept reality. If you are stuck and can't find a way to change the situation in the moment, acceptance gives you a way out of misery. In this case, radical acceptance will allow you to downgrade your suffering to pain and define the problem and manage it. Remember, pain and non-acceptance are equal suffering. If you are really stuck and cannot find any solution or change your relationship to the problem, maybe you need to stop fighting reality. Maybe you need to just accept the situation, Alan's sock on the stairs, and stop fighting it, unless it is a matter of imminent safety. Obviously, when it comes to safety, we have no choice. We have to keep fighting. 4, entertain misery. Stay stuck and miserable, and that's an option too. 5, worsen the situation, something that we all do far too often. While this 5th option, which you don't find in the Family Connections manual, is not an effective response to the problem, nor one we recommend, it is a possible response that we should be aware of so we can avoid it. As the manual states, if you do not want to stay stuck, entertain misery, you need to either focus on acceptance or change. If we are stuck on non-acceptance and non-change, then the only way out is to focus on acceptance or change. These are the twin foci of Module 6. So as we come to the end of the Family Connections course, we go right back to the original dialectic of DBT, to the idea of acceptance or change. The family can then, I'm going to go on now with the rest of page 34 in the manual, if you're following. The Family Connection manual then returns, after the 5 approaches to problems, to Dear Man, Give and Fast. I assume that most Family Connections leaders will have taught this carefully at the end of Module 5. So given time constraints, we usually skip it. It might be worth briefly noting that these acronyms provide us with carefully thought-out approaches to interacting with those suffering emotional dysregulation, since they focus heavily on validation. However, they can also be used with those who do not tend to emotional dysregulation, people who just have emotions, as we all do. Bottom line, these are useful tools to push the other person to change. That is to say, Dear Man, Fast and Give can be used to push the other to change. And if you turn now to the next PowerPoint, PowerPoint slide 8, before focusing on problem solving and problem management, which appear on pages 36 and 37 of the manual makes two important observations on page 35. And I'd like to just note this for a few minutes. Number one, the importance of accurate expression and timing, or those are the first two on your PowerPoint slide. And two, the importance of matching strategies or methods to goals or the types of problem you are trying to resolve. They function both as an introduction to problem solving and problem management and a way of tweaking Dear Man, Fast, and Give. That is to say, perhaps the reason that you're not succeeding but when you're using Dear Man, Fast, and Give is because you haven't picked the optimal time. You're not accurately expressing the situation or your desires. Perhaps these skills are not working because your time or match between strategies and goals is off. So it's very important to sort of tell people in the Family Connection course, you know, just keep this in mind, that these will help you use the skills better. That is to say, page 35. And note that emotional regulation and heavy validation are also crucial skills to keep the process going. So even when you're doing problem management and you're trying to negotiate a solution, you need to stay regulated and you need to validate the other person in order to keep the negotiation going, because otherwise it may just fall apart. Time permitting, I think it is worth opening a discussion about these two points, because timing is truly all important. And if you have not discussed it yet, it should be mentioned. Furthermore, discussing the relationship between strategies and goals is fundamental to DBT, where choosing the most effective skill to deal with the problem at hand is vital. If you had time, you could go on and on about this, honing the participant skills through various training exercises so that they learn to instinctively choose the most effective skill even under pressure. And now we can turn to PowerPoint slides 9 and 10, which are labeled collaborative problem management steps. And I've added to that the words in light of skills already taught, because I think that that's one of the things that makes this chapter so beautiful, is that it really does fit in with the skills that we've taught before, even though it's really geared towards a regulated individual in terms of problem management skills. Okay, so going back to my script. Before addressing problem management or problem solving, it is useful as an FC leader to reemphasize the structure of the rest of the module. Let people know what's coming up in the next few pages. Collaborative problem solving, non-collaborative problem solving or management, radical acceptance, and the closing message. Firstly, we need to notice that problem management can take two forms, collaborative and non-collaborative. If your loved one is open to rational discussion, you can collaborate on reaching a solution or plan by using the 8 or more steps of problem management found on pages 36 to 37 of the manual. Note that several more steps useful in collaborative problem solving or management are found on pages 38 to 39. Clarifying the problem and its evolution using a behavioral chain, examining what skills you used to target a problem in the past, that is to say, analyzing past successes, not just failures, brainstorming, contract and commit, and implement and follow up. When I discuss the problem management steps more detail in a moment, I will show how these additional steps on pages 38 and 39 fit neatly into the 8 Dr. Fruzzetti delineates on pages 36 to 37. And that was one of the things I noticed when I worked through the manual, that really 36 and 37, which are the steps, fit in with 38 and 39, where you have skills which can be neatly plotted into the 8, which in terms of teaching, it makes it much simpler. Note that problem management or problem solving is not as easy as it seems. And as Alan Fruzzetti pointed out in a call-in, it requires all the parties to have accurate expression, emotional regulation skills, and validation skills, or else the willingness to collaborate will evaporate quickly. There is a constant need to focus on skills and relationship mindfulness. And if we turn now to PowerPoint 13, which is skipping to, because I'll go back to those in a moment, we go to the next page in the manual, which is page 40. If your loved one is unwilling to work with you, is non-collaborative, then you can turn to page 40 of the manual and try to increase his or her motivation by either using techniques such as foot in the door or door in the face. What's foot in the door? I'll just talk about it a little bit because it's really interesting. Foot in the door is change a little bit now, then a little bit more later, and a little bit more later after that. Just get in there and chat about nothing. Show interest in the kids' music, school day, etc. You don't start with a no, you start with a yes. You start with a yes, and that's terrific. You open up the channel of communication. Then say the kids agrees, and then you validate and appreciate and get further agreement. Foot in the door is anything that keeps the collaboration moving in an honest way and gets a yes. And as anyone who knows a car salesman, that's one of their basic techniques, which I've phrased sort of differently, and Alan Fugetti here has phrased sort of differently. But foot in the door means I'll say to you, well, you know, I can get you this great car for only $1,000. And you say, oh, that sounds interesting. And they've got their foot in the door. And then they say, and for another $500, I can get you this. And then they up it a little more. And then they explain that it really doesn't have that, but still it's worth $1,000, and so on and so forth. So once they have their foot in the door, they keep validating and appreciating and get you to agree to other things that you might not have. And the other technique that you can see on this on the slide is door in the face. Where door in the face is the opposite of foot in the door. Door in the face is where you ask for a tremendous amount. You come to you come to ask charity from someone. You ask for $1,000, and they look at you in horror and say, "Well, that's really too much money for me to give today." And so you say, "Well, maybe then you could give me $500," and then they feel a little bit guilty because they didn't give you $1,000, and they're more open to saying, "Well, maybe." And there you started off with the door in the face, having them almost slam it on you, and in the end, you slowly manage by appreciating and validating to get through and get something. And the other techniques, of course, that you can use for non-collaborative individuals to try to get them to work with you are the core mindfulness skills that we've discussed, the relationship skills, etc., throughout the course. Or, of course, Dear Man, Fast, and Give, where Dear Man, you use the R to reinforce, the N to negotiate, and then obviously Fast and Give to give the tone to the argument you're making. And with these skills, you can just jump in and start working on making the other person see your point of view. You are the initiator, whether or not the other person even knows that there is a problem. Sometimes, if the non-collaboration is extreme, as you can see on page 40 in the Family Connections manual, where Alan begins to discuss that, then you will need to treat this as a chronic problem that you cannot solve in the moment. Give it some time and then check whether the other person even wants a solution or is capable of reaching one at this time. Remove yourself from the situation if you cannot find or set your limits. Perhaps take a relationship vacation. And then if change is truly impossible in the moment, truly accept the situation using the three boxes on pages 41 and 42. And that sums up the breakdown of the chapter. I would now like to focus on, go back to slide 9 and 10, and focus on pages 36 to 42 in the manual and explore them in some more depth.
Okay, while we have a minute there, I'd love to tell you that when you talked about the pages 35 and 36, the stating problems and solving problems, we spend a tremendous amount of time with our family groups on that. And the first one is the one that's usually the most difficult, where it says you actually have to agree as to what the problem is. Because our children will think, well, this is the problem, and Matthew and I talk, it's Ann, Matthew and I talk and say, well, no, the problem is something else. And what you have to do is discuss with them and come up with an agreement as what is the real problem and what is the goal. And we spend a lot of time talking with that in Family Connections Group with all of that. And the other thing is something that you mentioned on page 44 was a commitment to change. We say that probably three times every week. We said you have to commit to change. You must commit to change, because it says it, I think, twice somewhere in there. And so we always tell them, if you can commit to change, you will have a better life. And the other thing was putting the foot in the door. That's what we do, too. We tell them, get in there and talk about music. Talk about movies, things that you've seen, something that you can just talk about, nothing. And it opens the door, because you can chat with him. Matthew loves to talk to our son about all the music that he listens to. So it's one of those things. Okay, so go ahead. Keep going. You're doing a good job. Thank you. Keep going.
Okay, thank you for your contribution. If anyone else has something to say from their experience, I'd also love to hear them, too, if they want to chime in. Maybe we'll give them a second. Okay, no one is chiming in. Okay, so now I'll continue looking a little bit more deeply at the at the problem solving or problem management steps. So on PowerPoint page slides 9 and 10, we have I have the collaborative problem management steps in light of skills already taught. So I'm not going to go over every single skill and tell you exactly, every single step and tell you how to do it. That's in the manual, and that's you know, fairly clear. But what I will say is, when we taught it, we find that it really starts to become clear that even though you're dealing with a regulated person, a lot of the techniques and the tools that you're using are in light of skills that have already been taught. So I'd like to just go through those steps and show you how that works. So actually, maybe I'll go back to my script for a second, and then we'll do that. Note that the 8 problem management steps on pages 36 to 37 of the manual provide a slightly different take than the ones Dr. Frizzetti mentions in the video, the White Plains video, that's on the NEA APD website, though the content is largely the same. First, I will address the steps in the manual in terms of their connection to the family connection skills we have been learning. This is a good opportunity for review for the class, and also for them to begin to see how things come together. You can have the participants point out the skills they see and explain them. As I mentioned above, you can teach the 8 steps in the manual, adding brainstorm as number 8, contract and commit to a solution as part of 9, and implement and follow up as number 10. And by doing that, you basically bring together pages 36, 37, 38, and 39. I would be happy to address any specific questions about the steps, but like I said, I'm not sure that is necessary in this forum. Certainly, as you teach them, you will clarify the points of each step and how to perform them, and or have the participants act out various scenarios. And one of the things I said, what Anne just said about focusing on the problem and being quite clear on what the problem is, so I saw when I was in Canada this summer, I was fortunate enough to sit in on some Sash Bear Family Connections courses with Lynn and Rosanna, and it was beautiful to see how they managed to help the participants really hone down on what was really the issue. And that's the same thing here. I mean, that's if you can do that, so as a Family Connections leader, the more skilled you are, obviously, the better you'll be able to do it, but to really help people clarify what the problem is for each of the individuals, how they're going to bridge their differences, and really get to deal with what really is the problem. Okay, so if we go to the 11th slide, now we have I have here collaborative problem management steps, and this is the steps which confused me a little bit when I first went through it, that Dr. Frizzetti, obviously, when he wrote the chapter, he was thinking about certain things. When he wrote the book, he was thinking about certain things. When he was in the video, he was thinking about certain things. So there's certain differences in terminology, although the content is basically the same. But I do find that some of the terminology in one version is more helpful than the terminology in another one. So I wanted at least to make it clear in this talk to you that there's the list that we've already shown on PowerPoint slides 9 and 10, and then there's the list on 11, which is sort of an alternate list. And this list actually parallels Chapter 10 of Dr. Frizzetti's High Conflict Couple. If you haven't read the book, it's well worth it. I can put a plug in for it. And especially in terms of Chapters 10 and 11 for this chapter, for this module. Okay, so first let's just go through the slide. Number one, define problem very carefully, which says exactly what Anne said before. 2, analyze the problem. using chain analysis, if you wish. That's page 38 in the manual. 3, target problem. And here you get also sort of the concept of 1, mindfully. Focus. Don't renovate the kitchen when the roof is leaking. Focus on 1 problem at a time or it becomes too daunting. So that's what you always have to do with the problems. Focus on the one that you're dealing with now, 1, mindfully. And then 4, brainstorm possible solutions with your partner. 5, contract and commitment. Right, you create a contract between the two of you, and you formalize it. You, as Anne said, you make the commitment, because if you make the commitment, then you're in a better position. You can have a more effective life. And another way of saying that is negotiate an agreement. 6, evaluate if it is working. Right, so that's always very important. You've come up with it, you've got it, but now is it working? And that's also called implement and follow up. So once you're running the agreement, let's see how it's working, and let's check it out. Fine. And then 7, fine-tuning and recommitment, and 8, preventative maintenance. Okay? So as noted, all these steps are thoroughly discussed and delineated in Chapter 10 of Alan Frazetti's High Conflict Couple. I strongly recommend that you read it as background for teaching this module. It'll help you with both PowerPoint slides 9 and 10, and also with slide 11, and then you can make your own decision about how it's most effective for you to teach the course. If you turn now to slide 12, you'll find discovering more about your problem and possible strategies for change. So again, 2 useful ways to find out more about your problem, or as Anne said, figuring out what you're really trying to deal with and how to solve it, or our problem or behavioral analysis, which I'll discuss in a moment, and target something you did to change, which is on page 39 of the manual. The latter is useful as it teaches how to analyze what we did right when things worked out. And I think that's kind of an important thing to emphasize. We spend so much time sort of being judgmental and berating ourselves. We're trying not to berate ourselves, hopefully trying to self-validate, but thinking about what didn't go right, that sometimes it's really very important also to look at what did go right. If you did use a skill and that was successful, then that's very important, and you should notice that, and you should think about how you can use it again and in what situations you can use it again. Note that when problem solving hits a dead end, you can't reach a resolution. Sometimes all you need is a brief step back to breathe deeply, calm down, let go of judgments, and clarify your limits. If you have now discovered new ironclad limits, then you can go back to negotiating within the context of your newly discovered limits. Note that we talk about observing our limits, not about setting them, this is Alan talking, because they have to do with our ability to balance all the information, all the options, our values, our goals, and our needs, and these can change. So we don't set limits which can't be changed. We observe our limits, and when they change, we can change them as well. We can officially change them. They are not set. This whole process is not easy for the other person, and this is especially with your loved ones, right? When you've managed to discover what your limits are, and you need to communicate them if you want them to be respected, because they may not want to accept that you wish or need to observe these new limits. And you will need to validate a lot and remain emotionally regulated and fast, F-A-S-T, right? Not easy to give over your new limits, but that is what happens because we evolve, and it does change. I would now like to make a few comments about solving interpersonal or emotional problems when the person is an emotion mind, when there is a significant interpersonal component to the problem through chain analysis. And it's an interesting point because we've talked about using the right skills for the right situation. Dr. Frazetti points out that chains are less useful for resolving other kinds of problems, like factual ones. Who is going to pick up the kids, for instance? Though often these problems also have interpersonal aspects that can be examined by chain analysis. And if you look just at the chain analysis on page 38, you see that you want to feed in there the prior experiences, thoughts and emotions, statements and expressions. So this is very much a question of feeding in emotions and that side of things. It's not about, well, I'm at work and therefore I can't pick up the kid from school, so therefore you have to and you finish at 3 anyway, which are much more factual. But even those kinds of problems can have a significant interpersonal side to them. And if they do, then you can also use chains to help you understand the problem. And the more you go through them, the more you analyze your vulnerabilities, the triggers, the emotions, thoughts, and judgments, what each person said, the better you can understand what the problem is and how it might be possible to fix it. Okay, chain analysis. Chain or behavioral analysis is thoroughly discussed in High Conflict Couple, where another method of graphical representation is also used. And here you see on page 38 the chain, literally. There's also a vertical use of, I guess, bricks, if you will. If you look at the book, you'll see it. Some people might find that easier to visualize or use. The chain is useful because it is a graphical representation of the movement from non-dysregulation to engaging in target behavior. In the manual on page 38, we have two people's chain analyses because they're engaging with one another, right? You have A on one, on A and B. So you have two chains taking place and intertwining. But by the same token, you could have one chain just to figure out how you personally acted in a certain situation. Note that the circles that are colored in on page 38 are actions that take place in the public sphere, statements or actions, while the non-colored shapes, the white shapes, represent what takes place in the private sphere, private thoughts. And that's the beauty of the chains, is that you get a chance to sort of visually see at the same time what's going on in private and what's going on in public and how the two are interacting. Alan Fuzetti provides the following example on the tape for how useful chain analysis is. A mother waiting at home sees her daughter walk in the door after school, slam her bag down, and break the potted plant that was there. She does not clean the plant up. She just ignores her mother's reminder that she should clean up the mess she just made, curses at her mother, and runs to her room crying and slamming the door. Certainly a scenario we're all familiar with. Had the mother sat down with her daughter and done a chain analysis of her behavior, she would have found out that at school her two best friends had sat down in the last two chairs at lunch and implicitly disinvited her from sitting with them. Her daughter managed to engage in distress tolerance for 4 hours and planned to get home and go on the computer to talk with other friends. She really did come up with a pretty good plan for trying to regulate herself. When she got home, she finally let her emotions out and threw her bag down. Not such a bad thing to do, but she broke the potted plant entirely by accident. And when she noticed, she thought to herself, oh no, one more demand on me. So she allowed herself to ignore the mess, assuming that she would clean it up later. She didn't even notice that her mother saw what happened. When her mother calls after her to clean it up, this is one demand too many, and she goes slamming into her room, cursing. Once we know this backstory, have performed this chain analysis, this behavioral analysis, we can validate and react to the situation differently. Note that the daughter's behavior when she came in might have been far more irrational. She might have kicked the dog, slapped her younger sibling, punched the wall. To sum up, doing a chain analysis of your loved one's behavior and of your own enables you to share with one another what is going on inside your heads, what is making it difficult to comply with the other person's wishes, what your child's constraints are, such as peer pressure, a sense of hopelessness, and what your worries and therefore limits are, sometimes using up all your money, not being able to retire if you give your child too much. Not to mention that if your child does not know how to handle peer pressure, or she does not comprehend why she needs a curfew, no amount of punishment or even natural consequences, that is consequences that are related to the behavior. In other words, if you miss the curfew next week, your curfew will be earlier. If you miss it by 5 minutes, it'll be 5 minutes earlier next week. Or even removing positive consequences when behavior is negative. In other words, you're not punishing, but you're not giving the positive consequences that usually happen. or mild, or having mild negative consequences. None of this will help, especially with an emotionally dysregulated individual. You need to first do a dear man, and this is good advice. Do a dear man first, and then if that does not work, do a chain analysis. Be curious. The analysis will help you to see where things went wrong, and it will allow you to understand your loved ones and your own motivations or blocks to effective action. This will increase your compassion and aid in problem management. Okay, now if we go to the next slide. Slide 14. Finally, we come to pages 41 and 42. I won't go into radical acceptance in depth because the boxes here largely speak for themselves. And more importantly, Dr. Alan Fuzetti discusses radical acceptance in the White Plains Family Connection Leadership Training video on radical acceptance. This is a very useful summary for teaching the concept. I have appended a transcript or summary of Alan Fuzetti's discussion in my notes to Module 6. So if you're new leaders or if you got the new set of Family Connections notes this year, so there are notes on Module 6, which I actually wrote up, although I think that what I have here now is even more refined, and I will hopefully pass that along. And in those notes to Module 6, there's an appendix/transcript which summarizes Alan's discussion. In this video, Dr. Fuzetti uses the socks on the stairs as a sample case to illustrate the three steps of radical acceptance. One, cease, desist, and tolerate. Two, be mindful of negative consequences of non-acceptance. That is to say, if you choose not to accept and choose to be upset about the socks on the stairs, then you'll be distanced from your spouse. Your vulnerability will be increased because you'll be upset and she'll be upset. You'll begin to avoid the other. There'll be misery in your life. So there are negative consequences to not being skillful, to not accepting. Three, let go of suffering and engage in your life. And that's very, very crucial, and we'll get to that again in a moment. Note that Alan also presents a very thorough summary of this approach in High Conflict Couple, Chapter 12. It is well worth reading this chapter as background for the radical acceptance part of this module, and if you teach it earlier in the course as well. In closing this section of the call, I would like to stress that we should remember that going back to these core principles which guide the relationship is empowering, even if specific problems cannot be solved. And that bears repeating again. It empowers us to go back to the core skills, the acceptance, the validation, the curiosity, the compassion, the mindfulness, even if that doesn't enable us to solve the problems or even manage them all that well. They enable us to focus on the whole relationship, not just the particular problem. And that's really the point that Alan makes at the end of this, at the end of Family Connections and at the end of the of Module 6. And that's, if you look at slides 15 and 16, the chapter and course crescendos to the end with some inspiring closing words. Note, and this is for those of you, well, maybe I'll read the closing message first in the PowerPoint. This is someone that I love. This is a life I actually have. There are parts of it that I wouldn't trade even in a perfect world. So engage in validation. Be mindful of the other person. Let go of your focus on grieving for your loss. Participate fully in the relationship without gaps from non-acceptance. Be in the room with the person. Be fully participate, be present. See the whole picture and participate fully in your life as it is, not as it could be, and certainly not as it should be. Enjoy what there is to enjoy. And there's more other useful material like this in High Conflict Couple in Chapter 11 there and in the last pages. For instance, Alan asks, what are the not problems? That is to say, those good things in the relationship that are not a problem. Maybe we can focus on that. Let's focus on the not problems, on the good things. Attend to what is, not to what is not. It is so easy to pay attention to what we do not like instead of the rest of our lives or of the relationship. And I'd just like to share a story that Alan tells in one of his discussions of Module 6. And he talks about the fact that he once had to paint a room in his house, and he emptied out the room, and he sanded the walls, and he painted the whole entire room, and then he, all the paint dried and everything, he put back all the stuff, and then he noticed that he missed a spot. And what are you going to do when you notice you miss a spot? Reacting drastically to that unpainted spot is out of balance. When we pay attention to what we do not like, we miss the fact that the whole room is painted. You could lament forever, unless you want to move all the furniture back out of the room, that the room is not painted perfectly, that there's an unpainted spot. And that will ruin your whole joy at everything else that you do have. So Alan related, I did this. I did this, that is, he didn't repaint it, and left a spot there for the last 6 years to remind myself that not everything is as it should be. And that's okay. And you can accept that. Now, Alan says you don't have to actually do that. It's his practice. But again, accepting the world as it is and not as it should be allows us to see the joy where there is joy instead of only seeing the gloom and what we don't have, and especially what we feel we should have had. Going on to the last slide, Sikh Nat Han, the mindfulness guru, says, when you understand, you cannot help but love. You cannot get angry. And when you love, you naturally act in a way that can relieve the suffering of people. And I think that that's obviously what Family Connection is all about. Relieving your own suffering, relieving in a secondary way the suffering of your loved ones. And when you understand yourself and how you've reached the point that you've reached, you can't help but love yourself. You can't help but be non-judgmental because you have been trying as hard as you can in the moment with the skills you have. And even if you need to try harder, that doesn't in any way undermine the fact that you're just doing great as you are. And then you can't get angry at yourself, and you can't judge yourself. And then you'll act in a way naturally that can relieve the suffering, your own suffering, and the suffering of those around you. So with that, I will close my presentation on Module 6. And if anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to try and answer them. If anyone has any comments, I'd be even more interested to hear them. Thank you.
Hi, Mashalom. It's Matt Costello here. I want to thank you for the... I felt like it was a master class in Module 6, which I certainly could use. So thank you. Thank you very much, because, as you know, it's something we wrestle with and all wrestle with.
Definitely.
Well, so one question I had for you in listening, you know the 8 steps of problem management.
Right.
Like many people teach in class, by the time they get to Module 6, we tend to cherry pick. We cherry pick things, say we got to do that, got to do this. This will not do. And, of course, we do the 8 steps. One thing we haven't done, I'm wondering whether it's something you've looked at, thought about doing, or maybe have done. Have you actually worked through with people specific problems using those steps, almost like in a role-playing fashion or as an example, here's how the steps work in action. Have you tried anything like that?
Right. So the interesting thing is that in my experience so far, I've not had much time to do Module 6 because we've been very concerned with the first 5 modules. Mm-hmm. And part of why I thought about Module 6 a lot is so that I could sort of break it down and try to teach it more holistically, which would let me save time and teach it. And I think that what you're saying, I think, is brilliant. And it's sort of also what I said about the Sash Bear Family Connections training that I sat in on. That if you can sit down there and state a problem and work through it with someone in the class in front of everybody, or you can role play it, I think it's incredibly valuable. And, if there was one thing that time permitted in teaching the 6th module, that's what I would do. Mm-hmm. I would really, try to teach the 6 steps. Or it's also, there's a lot of steps. I mean, 6 steps, 8 steps, 10 steps. Right. I mean, there's a lot of things in there, and it's hard for someone to sort of, pick up on all at once. But thinking off the top of my head, maybe what you need to do is make a card, like we have cards, for the basic assumptions and the rights of family members. And so that people can begin to just use these every day as they're going around, and that's part of the practice of it.
One thing that we've done with the time issue is as I said, we cherry pick things in Module 6.
Right.
But we have an alumni group we see once a month, and we say we're going to come back and revisit some of these things in our support group. Because then we can breathe, we have time, we can actually slow things down. And I think, you know, Ann mentioned, and I think you also sort of agreed, one thing that's extremely valuable is simply asking people, well, what's, in a very open way, what's the problem with that? What is the actual problem? Because people tend to lump things together. This happens, that happens. They don't get up. They don't go to work. They don't do that. But what is the core thing, the thing you're really concerned about? Number one, identify that. And it actually catches people off guard because they see a lot of problems, but they don't see the problem. They don't see the core one sometimes that's really at the heart of it. And it's a very simple question. But, again, thanks for this. It's been very helpful for me, that's for sure.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your comment. And I agree with you. It's just brilliant when you see someone working through it and finally hitting that problem, then a whole door's open. Because you're actually dealing with what has to be dealt with and not with the periphery. And I also say, we've also started an alumni class here in Israel, and that's exactly what we're doing here also. I mean, there's no question the practice is the most important thing, and the alumni classes give us an opportunity to deepen and to practice more. So we're following your model here.
Terrific. Great.
Okay, are there any other questions, or are we done? I think we've reached.
Oh, okay. I was going to also, this is Anne, that we do a lot of role-playing for the chain analysis also. And Matthew and I, he'll be my son and I'll be myself, and we do all that stuff. And we do also the Dear Man and the Give Fast in number 5. So we do it before number 6. Okay, Mashlum, that was really wonderful. It was a fabulous group there. It sounds wonderful. I'm going to say that December 17th is our next call-in at 4 o'clock Eastern Standard Time with Cheryl Kapinski and Donna Shield in Observing Limits, which you just talked about. I think a lot of people need it all the time because when we have support groups, we do support Observing Your Limits a lot of times because people need to keep doing that.
Crucial.
It is very crucial. Yeah. Right. So thank you so much. That was wonderful. And it's late for you. Go to sleep. And we'll see you when we see you. Thank you, everybody who's on there. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for running it.